Good morning. This joint meeting of the House and Senate Education Committees will come to order. Today is Wednesday, March 29th, and the time is 8:03 a.m. Members of House Education present are Representative Dave Tallarico, Representative Chuck Kopp, Representative Jennifer Johnson, Representative Ivy Sponholz, and Representative Zach Fansler. Senator Hughes, go ahead and introduce the members of your committee.
Good morning, everyone, and I'm excited what we have this morning. This morning we have present with us Senator Begich, Senator Coghill, Senator Giesel, and myself, Senator Shelley Hughes. And I just might say, Representative Drummond, and here comes Senator Stevens for the record. I have to leave at 9 o'clock, so I want the school board members to know I will be leaving the room, not because I don't like what you're saying, but I have to be somewhere else. So I'll get filled in on what I missed.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Before we begin, I'd like to remind everyone to silence their cell phones. Our records secretary today is Nancy Jones, and we have Ben Manley here from the LIO to help us out as well. Thank you both. For those of you watching online, you may not be able to tell, but we have quite a few guests in our audience today. We have all 10 members of the State Board of Education and Early Development here with us today. And that includes the 7 voting members, the military advisor, and both student members. As long as I have been a member of this body, and that's been since 2013, we have never done this before. We've only had a report from the chair of the state board, but we've never seen all of you together in the same room. And I'm really grateful that you all took the time to be with us today. To that end, we're going to be a bit more informal than we normally are. We're going to have each of the members up to the front to introduce themselves, and then we're going to have a question and answer period with the board and the committees, committee members today. I know that I'd like to hear more about the Alaska Education Challenge, and I'm sure that other committee members have questions as well. And I'd like this to be more of a conversation or a dialogue than a committee hearing. James Fields, the chair of the board, will act as our de facto moderator, and after the introductions, will facilitate which members would be the best to speak to our committee questions. I'd like to invite Mr. Fields up to the front now to introduce himself.
Hey, thank you. For the record, James Fields, chair of the State Board of Education Early Development. Thank you for this up. I have a few opening remarks, if you don't mind. Would you mind that now or later?
One moment. I'd like to recognize that Representative Parrish has joined us, so we have a complete complement of committee members, and that Commissioner Michael Johnson is in the room. All right. Go ahead, Mr. Fields.
Yeah, thank you. Just thank you for this opportunity to meet with you guys. Like Representative Drummond has said, this is another positive step in moving education forward in the state. The same with me. As far as I've been a part of this body, this has never happened in the way of having this type of collaboration with both education committees at the legislature. The Board of Education has been working towards a plan with the goal of transforming the way student learning happens in the state. The next step in that plan is Alaska's Education Challenge Initiative, which Representative Drummond has brought up. With our five strategic objectives, the commissioner is forming committees to really dive into the ideas on how to move us to providing an excellent education for every student every day, which is our mission statement. With committee members from a wide variety of stakeholder groups, including legislators, administrators, local school board members, parents, teachers, business leaders, we are hopeful that transformative ideas and action steps will come forward and have widespread support to then move forward and implement throughout our state. It's well known, I think you guys have had a lot of examples and testimony on pockets of transformative work, but the goal is to take those pockets and allow it to be used throughout the state. You all are critical of this process, and we would like to hear your concerns and comments and ideas around where we are going with Alaska Education Challenge, and look forward to having you join us on the various committees that the commissioner is forming. I would like to allow various board members to respond to questions you may have, so you can hear from various members of the board as we move forward. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fields. Let's see. How would you like to proceed?
Shall we go? I think if we just go ahead and start, probably go from the vice chair, second vice chair, and then back, if they want to come up and just introduce themselves, would that be appropriate?
That would work. Okay. We do have a microphone, a moving microphone.
Well, we can do that, too.
Yeah, instead of popping it. Okay. Unless, of course, you'd like to get some exercise. That would be
Alf? I'm happy to just stay here.
Is this working?
That
works. Yes? Okay. I'm Sue Hull. I'm the first vice chair. I'm from Fairbanks. I've been involved with schools for a long, long time. I actually served on the State Board of Education for 5 years back in the 80s and have been engaged since then. And I can tell you a lot of things have changed. But I'm really excited myself to be part of this initiative. I served for a dozen years on the Fairbanks School Board and just recently left that board in November. And I'm really encouraged about what people in our state, I think there's a hunger for transformation in education among education stakeholders and the public at large. And so I'm really pleased to be able to be part of this board. I think we have a strong, energetic board that really cares about kids and is focused on the right things. And it's a privilege for me to be part of it.
Good morning, members of the House and Senate Education Committees. My name is John Harmon. I'm from the Mat Sioux Valley. I'm in Senator Hughes's district, and my family's been in Alaska a long time. I went to Glacier View Elementary School, if any of you folks know where that is. I'm a graduate of Palmer High School. I practiced law for many years, was a Fortune 100 corporate attorney. I returned to Alaska, where I've been a high school principal, and next year I'm excited to be teaching 11th and 12th grade English as well as AP English.
Hi, I'm Barbara Thompson, and I live in Douglas, Alaska, right across the bridge. I've been in education for about 40 years in various areas, at the local level in adult education, the state level with the Department of Education, and at the national level with an education compact, the Education Commission of the State. I am pleased and proud to be on this board working with all of the board members, and we are extremely excited about the Alaska Challenge, and I'm particularly excited about how it's going to impact student achievement and teacher preparation and teacher effectiveness. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Wilfred Zabel. I'm the youth advisor to the board. I'm a senior this year, so I guess you could say I've been in education for 12 years. I'm from Norvik, up near Kotzebue, It's been an honor to be on this board, and I'm greatly looking forward to what we can achieve through Alaska's Education Challenge, as well as through this hearing. So, thank you.
I'm Charles Michael. I'm from Palmer, Alaska. I'm about 3 miles out of Senator Hughes's district, and I'm the youth advisor-elect to the board.
Good morning. I'm going to take the liberty of standing up so that I can actually see everybody. My name is Rebecca Hemshoot. I'm a teacher from Sitka, Alaska. I serve on the state board. We have a super energized board, and I'm really grateful to you for making time this morning to hear from us. And I just have to give a shout out to two former students, Ella Lubin and Joe Pate, who happen to be in the room today. And when there are students here, I want to make sure they're recognized. So those are my former students. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Lieutenant Colonel Jason Toole. I'm a staff officer at Joint Base Helmsville Richardson, and I'm also fortunate to serve as a military advisor to the board on behalf of Lieutenant General Rosebach. Thank you.
Good morning. Dr. Keith Hamilton. Also serve on the board, a very unified board, I might add, of folks that are committed to our state's 130,000 plus school children. My role is a little bit unique. I was asked to serve on this board due to my real life, I guess, job as the president of Alaska Christian College, bringing in the post-secondary educational component into what does and what we do on a daily basis. And so I have the privilege of crossing over from the college life to the K-12 life. I also sit on the Alaska Commission for Post-Secondary Education, so I have the opportunity to see that group move forward too with their objectives as we move ahead to try to connect a lot of the K-12 with what's happening in the post-secondary world. And I'm grateful that we have, again, I mentioned a unified board. I want to make that point to you. We feel like we're moving ahead like we never have before. It's a couple of years that I've served. We are, I'd say, running ahead on this new challenge, and I get to serve on the safety and well-being portion of that as a co-chair.
Good morning. Kenny Gellinghorn from Coxa View. So glad to have you all here. Glad you guys invited us. I'm from Coxa View, and education is just so important to me and my family is why I'm here. And I represent the, in my mind, the rural district. And I appreciate everything you guys do for education. You guys do a lot, whether you know it or not. And keep up the great work. And it seems to me like we're going in the right direction. We're, it's been said two or three times, we're very unified, we're together. And me, I'm so result-orientated is my life. And I feel like we're getting there. We're getting some results. And I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, board members. I didn't really say where I'm from. I'm from Glen Allen, Copper River School District. I've been on a local board and still am for, I think, 7 years. And then I've been on the state board for 4. So, and I'm the REAA member, representative for the State Board of Education. So, thank you. I guess we're here for questions.
All right. Who'd like to begin? Did I see a hand? Senator Hughes, go ahead.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted that you are all here. I know we're going to talk about the Alaska Education Challenge, and I think that should be a focus because I think we need to know more about that. But before we delve into that, and maybe it's part of that, the Alaska Education Challenge, I'd like to ask you about your work in ensuring that our graduates are ready for the university. As you know, there was a news article telling us that far too many students who actually have quite decent GPAs from, I remember reading 3.2 to 3.7, are requiring remedial coursework. So is there work being done to align the curriculum at the K-12 with so that the students are ready? And I'm not sure, James, who the best person to address that, but I'll leave that up to you.
Okay, thank you. Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I'd like to invite Sue Hull to respond to that.
James is handing the mic to me because I'm chairing a joint committee of the State Board of Education and the Regents. Dr. Hamilton and I represent the State Board, and Andy Tubler and Dell Anderson are the Regents on the committee. And the two boards were clear at last fall's meeting. They gave us a very clear charge about what we're to work on, and I'd like to just read to you the 9 elements of that charge to give you some reassurance. One is creating a culture of education. Reducing developmental coursework, I think that's what Senator Hughes is referring to. Expanding concurrent enrollment, so students get credit in both. Okay, get credit at both institutions, their high school as well as at college. Improving educator preparation, expanding Alaska educator recruitment, ensuring educator retention, simplifying the transfer of credit, and ensuring smooth transitions. And then to your question specifically, we need, and we all know this, we need greater systems of accountability in terms of, you know, our kids getting the education we say they're getting when they get those great GPAs that you were just talking about. And utilizing today's technology, there are ways to ensure that kids, there's tracking all along to ensure that Algebra 1 is really Algebra 1, no matter where it's taught. So I think that both the Regents and the State Board of Education are aware of that problem. I think there's one of the Education Challenge committees focused on student achievement, and certainly the Modernization Committee will also be dealing with that, as well as, you know, others of the committees as they brush up against it. Having accountability so that kids are getting what we tell them they're getting, I think, is really important. And I can't imagine we will come out with recommendations that don't include ways to improve that.
Thank you.
Okay, one moment. I'd like to recognize that Representative Laura Reinbold has joined us. Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Fields.
Oh, no, I didn't have anything else to add, but I would say Board Member Hull did bring up the 5 priorities, and I would, you know, that you're talking about student achievement, which I think we'll touch on every single one of those one way or the other. So.
Representative Parrish.
Oh, Johnson.
Representative Johnson.
Can I do a follow-up to that?
Go ahead.
In that article, there was one sentence that I'm not sure if the committee is looking at, but the one sentence was that the students who did not do remedial actually had a greater success rate than the students that were put into remedial. And I wonder how you plan to address that issue, in other words, raising the bar.
Well, that's what we have to do within the K-12 system. It can't be that they have to take remedial classes at the university level. That's the whole point, is that if they graduate from our high schools, they should be college and career ready, and we're focused on that. Is that your question?
Kind of, except it also, to me, that one sentence said to me that maybe we were putting very bright students into remedial programs that they didn't belong to, and we weren't having the proper expectations when they did go to university, or maybe even in high school, that they actually could make up a distance very quickly if they were given the opportunity.
Right. Well, two answers to that. Maybe you're referring to accelerating those remedial classes, but I think what we're more focused on is preventing students from having to take remedial classes when they arrive there, because the success rate, you know, what you were speaking about, you know, that they're not successful after those remedial classes, is that, you know, they spend a year or however long, they really don't have any credits toward graduation. It's discouraging for kids to feel like, I got a great GPA in my high school, I was an honor student, and now I'm in remedial courses that don't even count toward graduation. We just have to eliminate that problem. And the way is to ensure that those grades that they were getting in high school actually reflect the academic achievement necessary to be college and career ready.
I'd like to remind everyone that even though we're being informal to aid our record secretary, if everyone could state their name before they begin speaking, that would be great. You don't have to go through the chair, just state your name. Thank you.
Thank you. Member Hemshute, did you want to respond to?
I think Member Hill gave a fairly accurate response, but I just wanted to add a couple of things. For one thing, when we talk about remedial coursework, defining remedial would be an important question that I think requires a little more study. I'd also like to add, there's research showing that if children aren't reading by third grade, they're going to need remedial work all the way through, and they may not make it through. So we can find research to support all kinds of needs at all different levels. So I think there's still a lot of room for improvement, but there's also a lot of room for interpretation on that particular study. Thanks. Rebecca Hemshute, I think I forgot to say that.
Thank you.
I'd like to do a follow-up with Rebecca Hemshute on reading by third grade. That is one of the most critical things that I have heard in all my years as first as an Anchorage School Board member and now as a member of the House Education Committee. We've been focusing a lot on learning about pre-K and what is being delivered in the state in terms of pre-kindergarten, and I know how critical that is to kids arriving at school in kindergarten and being ready to learn. Could you speak to that? And also, where is pre-K on your priorities as a board, since it is the Department of Education and Early Development?
That's a great question, Rebecca Hemshute. So I'm not sure how far I should go with my remarks, but I will say there's a lot of interest and a lot of importance placed on pre-K. We have about 50,000 children in the state between the ages of 0 and 5, about 10,000 at each age. Within our education challenge, I'm sure that pre-K will be addressed as our committees do their work. I think there's a lot of emphasis and importance on pre-K. It is valuable. Obviously, families need to do what families need to do, so working with parents is a huge part of that. Any family supports that we're able to provide, guidance for parents, is helpful. But from an education, a public education point of view, high-quality pre-K has been shown to have incredible returns. So as we go through the education challenge, I can imagine every single committee is going to take up pre-K as part of their considerations.
On this subject, Senator Begich, go ahead.
Just to follow up on that subject, today I'll be having read over the Senate floor a high-quality pre-K bill that looks at the collaboration with some of our early ed programs as well. I encourage you to take a look at that in all of your committees as perhaps one route to this, but it takes advantage of our existing experience in the state of Alaska. Looks at what we've been doing for the last 8 years around our demonstration projects with pre-K, and then takes it to the next level by also developing collaborative and collaborative relationships between Best Beginnings, parents as teachers, but also always retaining that high-quality component that our department has been so good at doing. So I would encourage you to look at that bill today.
Okay, thank you for the record, Chair Fields. And again, I point back to the Alaska Challenge. I think legislatively, obviously, we can get help, but also inspire tribal and community ownership. I mean, if we can get the communities involved with pre-K and see that as a major need, then that's huge. But that's part of our Alaska Challenge as well.
Brief follow-up, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
There's a component that specifically identifies the need to collaborate with both cultural and tribal component in the bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yesterday I was at the Juneau School Board meeting. It was very interesting. I like being here. It's great to be in a room full of people committed to education. One, of course, it was a budget meeting, and they've got to adopt a budget before the city adopts a budget. Then the city's got to adopt a budget before the state is likely to adopt a budget. So what can we do for you by way of providing you with some certainty, some confidence, and the support that you need? What do you need from the members of the legislature?
Board Member Fields, I'll answer. I'm on a local Copper River School District board, and as they had a budget meeting, they actually scheduled while I'm here. I head back on Thursday, and I'll have a budget meeting on Friday, very similar. And so a sustained fiscal plan for local school districts, and as you well know, any local type of community is critical, because you're trying to figure out where you're going to land teaching-wise, administrator-wise, and you have no certainty. So you've got, you know, in years past, we've had 3 to 4 different scenarios based on what the rumors are, what the potentials are in the legislature. So trying to set a budget up, trying to get where you need to be teaching-wise, it's critical to get some type of sustainable fiscal plan. As a business owner, I have businesses in Glen Allen. Same thing. I don't know where I'm going to land. I'm trying to get wisdom from others, trying to say, okay, where should I look to? And all I can do is surmise. And so a sustainable fiscal plan is critical for school districts. And the Alaska Education that Challenge, I think the governor is trying to put $250,000 there and move that forward. Me personally think that is money well spent. I think we have the right leadership in place. I think we have the right alignment in place with the governor, with the legislature. It's obvious that this is a big issue, and it's obvious that I think the legislature wants to try to invest in where we're going. You have a strong board, and I think we have buy-in with stakeholders around the state to move this plan forward. So there's a couple of different things that the legislature could help us with. John Harmon, Member Harmon, you want to respond?
Yeah, for the record, my name is Member, I'm John Harmon, and I'm the second vice chair. And, you know, what comes to mind for me when this question is oftentimes asked is a quote from John Kennedy, and it relates to, children are our most valuable resource and our best hope for the future. So I know in Alaska, and we hear the discussion and debate, people talk a lot about our natural resources and other resources that are out there, and then the investments we have. And there's so many challenges, and we really appreciate everything that everyone's trying to do to solve these issues. But again, I would just remind people of that. Children are our best resource for the future. And I don't know that that answers your question, but I think if we put things, have a vision and a priority, our human resources are so important in this state. Our children are the basis of those human resources. And really to invest in them, I think, is important. It's an investment that we need to just be focused on. So thank you.
I'd like to simply make a comment on having been on the local school board and now on this body. I think timing of the budget is of the utmost
requirement, because I know that your budgets all begin on the 1st of July, as does the state's budget, and we're all moving towards the same target, yet local school boards and local assemblies and city councils that have to approve your budgets are on the same schedule. And the longer the legislature waits to finalize a budget, the more different scenarios you have to look at. I remember how disturbing that was, profoundly disturbing. Thank you. I'm going to move on to Senator Stevens and then Representative Kopp.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I seem to be hearing from a lot of university folks, college folks, concerns about dual credit and whether the students are really getting a college credit. I mean, I love the idea of a young person graduating from high school and having some classes ready to go into college, but we want to make sure that they are of university or college stature, and maybe Sue Hall or maybe Keith Hamilton, I know they've been working on it. How can the school board ensure that when we give a young person a 3 credits, 6 credits, whatever, college credits, that they are, in fact, of that level?
Thank you. Member Hall?
Well, that's one of the important things. I mean, we want them to be rigorous. We want them to be equal credit, and we can do that. You know, where I live in Fairbanks, you could have the same teacher teaching the course. You'd have the same curriculum, et cetera. But we have students that are able to do that, as they do in other parts of the country. And I think there are ways for us to ensure that through the parameters of the credentials of the teacher, as well as the performance of the students, much like AP classes. We can have exit exams, et cetera, that assure people that the content, am I understanding your question right, is comparable to what they would receive were they a university student. But if they could get a year or two of college while they're in high school, if they're able to do that, that saves the student money, it saves the state money, it's just smart all the way around. So we really see a need to pursue that and give our kids that opportunity if they're able to perform at that level.
Dr. Keith Hamilton, for the record, she stole most of my comment. it's so very true that our state, I think, lacks or is slow behind other states when it comes to this dual credit transfer. There are students who are finishing up high school ready to go into their sophomore, the junior year of college, because they have a very rigorous program before them. I think we can do that. I think Alaska Education Challenge, that's going to come up over and over and over again in that area, is that we have got to pick up the speed on this. And I will add to that a comment that you made in your question. Not only is this dual credit issue, but also the transfer of credit between the university and between the ACPE colleges that are in our state, that are not part of the UA system, are having difficulty still in transferring credit between them. And I'll give you just one easy example, is that I serve as the president of a small Christian college in Soldotna, Alaska. Across the street is the Kenai Peninsula College. We have a wonderful relationship with them. We have since their president, or director, got there and I arrived 15 years ago. And we do everything except transfer credit. So I have a professor on our campus who has a PhD who teaches a math class for us, Math 143, I believe it is. And then he also teaches across the street at the Kenai Peninsula College. Now, we adapted their curriculum to ours. He teaches on both sides of the street. Guess what? No transfer of credit. And that's just because we are in a different accrediting body, and that's an issue for the university. And they're working at it. I'll tell you, this isn't, I'm not saying this negatively. I'm saying we are now starting to see these pathways open up. And a resolution has come out from the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. And today the DEED will look at that as well, or the State Board today will look at another resolution that mirrors that, possibly. They will vote to say, yes, let's figure out how to take the barriers down between the dual credit issue and the transfer credit issue in our state.
Member Zabel, would you like to respond?
Thank you. Wilfred Zabel, for the record. And being myself a student taking dual credit courses, I think that what I absolutely agree that we do need to ensure that there is quality in our dual credit system. And in my district, one thing that is done is the student can take classes directly from the university through online courses, and the district will reimburse them. And I don't know whether this would work across all districts or whether a similar model might be pursued, but I think that as a general rule, and this is part of, I'm sure, what the Modernization Committee will look at, but hemming a closer line with the university system and forging partnerships between districts and the university system and between the department and the university system, I think would go a long ways towards solving that issue, and I believe that the Modernization Committee will certainly take that into consideration. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up on Senator Stevens and Representative Johnson's comments about integrating K-12 and post-secondary and the remedial aspect, we have been hearing for several years the high percentage of high school graduates that need remedial education when they enter the university system. And I think we're all pretty excited about a stronger integration of the standards so that it is more seamless and better reflective of a unified approach to our education system rather than silos. My question is, does this discussion, is it leading the board to look at encouraging our education system, particularly K-12, to be less focused on a graduation rate and more focused on rigorous coursework and aligned standards that truly match expectancy of the university system so that there's not a surprise for the students entering and there's not maybe a false expectation that they're prepared? Is that the direction the board is going?
Let's go ahead and have Member Michael speak first.
So a big part of what the board's goal is to have local control over things like, over curriculum and things like that. And in my personal school district, Matsu, we are updating the history curriculum to better reflect what a college history course will be like. So instead of being based, like fact-based with when was the War of 1812 or whatever, it's more based on how to look at primary sources and the things that you would do in a college classroom. And by doing things like that, at the local level, the state as a whole is becoming stronger in preparation for college. Remember, Mike, for the record, I didn't say that.
Anyone else want to respond? Member Hull?
Member Hull, I hope we never get away from caring about graduation rate. So I'm sure that's not what your question meant to imply. But, I mean, I think that both are important, and I don't think they're exclusive, you know. I think we should always expect that we're going to have 100% graduation rate, and when kids graduate, that they're prepared. One of the things that we might need to look at, I think, and that's happening in other states, is differentiated diplomas. So that it's clear, for example, Virginia last spring adopted a suite of legislation that they now, for the last 2 years of high school, kind of have separate tracks that kids choose. One is to the university, and then you get college prep sorts of classes, one to their community college system, and another track that's into the workplace that relates kids and connects them to certifications and other kinds of post-secondary preparation that's not necessarily just at the community college or the university. I mean, there are ways to look at, we want everybody to graduate, but we also want them to be prepared for success in the future, whatever their choices may be, and so that's something we might want to look at.
We talked yesterday, the National Association of State Boards of Education, actually we had some people come in and do some board training, and one of the things that they discussed is standardized learning, and are we actually doing that? And that's basically, you've got to align all your systems to make sure that you're holding that standard accountable, district to district to district, and so forth. And again, I would say that this topic is probably overarching all of our five priorities, same thing. I mean, you want your community to have ownership of those standards. You want your community to hold the school district and the school local to those standards so every student can have success, whether they go to college, whether they go into the workforce, whatever they may do, that they have success. And so defining that success, obviously, is it, sometimes can be a moving target, but I think we can get to a standard that is across the whole state for sure.
Just, I see more answers. I'd love to delve into this just a little bit more.
And for the record, John Harmon, and I think it's a great question, through the chair, I think that's a great question. You know, something that is really exciting in education right now is the implementation, and we haven't developed the plan yet. We're going through the process through the Every Student Succeeds Act. So, you know, what that's doing is it's giving more control back to the states from the federal government, which I think is just wonderful. So when you're talking about whether it's data points such as graduation, student learning, you know, the elements that we're putting together in the Alaska Challenge, I think it's going to give us a great opportunity to be innovative and to solve some of these challenges we have. And, you know, that's being developed. I believe the date is September that we have to have something finalized, and we're going through that process. So more to come, but I want you to know that I think it's a great question, and I think we're looking at all of those elements. So thank you.
You mentioned, Mr. Harmon, the Every Student Succeeds Act. This is Chair Drummond for the record. I'm concerned about what's going on in Washington, D.C. in terms of ESSA. I've heard that it's been paused by the administration. What does that mean for the states in terms of proceeding towards that September deadline, which I've known about for
quite some time? And that's a great question. I will defer to Chair Fields on that.
Member Hemschutz giving me eyes, and she's been in D.C., so she may have an answer to that.
Thanks. This is Member Hemschutz. I am actually not in Sitka this year. I'm serving a fellowship at the National Science Foundation for a year, which has been an incredible opportunity to learn, but I am homesick every day. I have to just make sure people realize I'm suffering while I'm out there. And I truly am. I really do want to be home. But I'm learning a lot. And so I've had access to a lot of briefings and panels, and the buzz in D.C. is all about ESSA, as it should be. All eyes are on it. There's no pause. There was a repeal of the Obama regulations. And so regardless of how one feels about what those regulations were trying to do, it means we've boiled back down to the basic law. They did change the template, so states who were submitting their plans in April, I think we're allowed to continue with the old template. We've had a change to our template of how we will actually respond to the law. But Alaska's on track. We have a timeline. There's been a lot of stakeholder engagement. There will be more, and there's this fantastic and very positive sort of confluence of the two, or multiple, I should say, events in education in Alaska. We have ESSA, which requires stakeholder engagement, at the same time that we as a board are looking at our strategic plan and upgrading, and then the Alaska Education Challenge. So it all fits together really well. We'll submit something in September, but it's not in stone. And as our committee work for the Education Challenge is completed, we may make changes to that plan. But D.C. is not holding back. There is some lag time with the transition to the new administration, but they're not saying that it's not happening.
Thank you. Okay, I have Senator Hughes, Representative Fansler, and then Representative Johnston.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like you to talk about how you are, what you are doing and what you're working on to ensure that we have enough and the best teachers. We know there's a national shortage. We know we have turnover in some of our communities that's just too high. And we also learned, I believe it was in a joint committee, that the cost of that turnover can be estimated as high as $50,000 every time a teacher turns over. But more grievous than that is the loss of student learning. We also know, and I think someone mentioned how important family involvement is, parental, and that can be the top indicator of how well a student will do. But we also know sometimes that support is not in a home. And the only thing that can overcome that, if it's absent, is the home. In the home is a great teacher. And so that's one of the reasons we've been looking at virtual education, as you know, to give access to great teachers statewide for communities where the recruitment of teachers and retention of teachers has been tough. So if you could just talk about what you are doing to ensure we have enough and the best teachers possible.
Thank you. Member Thompson?
I'm Barbara Thompson. One of the major focus areas of our strategic plan is ensuring educator excellence. We expect that to be a major focus of the Alaska Challenge as well, and getting suggestions and ideas from all across the state. The Department of Education, through the board, we approve teacher preparation programs. We're always looking to make sure that those programs are doing those things that would ensure educator excellence in the more urban areas of the state as well as in rural areas of the state where turnover is extremely high. Mentoring efforts, while the mentoring program no longer exists as it was, mentoring has not stopped in the state. The university has continued to work on that as well as local school districts. So oftentimes that extra support for teachers or administrators makes the difference in keeping them in the state and in their schools. So we anticipate working closely with the university on teacher preparation issues, as well as looking to flexibility for teacher certification requirements. And we've passed regulations within the last year or so that do provide some flexibility or alternatives for teachers to become certified and work in our state that didn't exist before. So it is something that I know we're going to hear a lot about from not only teachers across the state, but parents and community members as well.
I'm fascinated to hear about the request for alternative teacher education. We have been hearing a bill from Representative Price Tompkins, the limited teacher certificate, and we did pass it out of House Education. What is the board's opinion? Is the board aware of this bill, and do you have opinions on it? I believe it's 152. No, 102. Excuse me.
Yeah, we were updated on Monday very briefly. So I think department is having more discussion with the author of that bill. And so at this point, we don't have any position on it. It's really at this point still in getting more information to the board about it. Anytime we can try to figure out a way to increase our teachers, and not only increase the teachers, but have them be proficient, have them be able to teach well, is something that we'll definitely look at and want to improve. I think I heard that there was one district looking for 60 teachers at the last, I mean, just a couple weeks ago. I mean, that is substantial, looking for 60 teachers. I mean, you're lucky to even have 60, let alone quality. I mean, I think they're down. I think there were 200 total at the meeting in Anchorage. So, yeah, it's an issue. And, it's on our priority list. And as you can see, there's a lot of things that we're trying to tackle. And the department, with how much they've been dwindled down, it even taxes them more. So these committees that we're putting together, that the commission is putting together, are critical to come out with ideas and action steps that we can start trying to implement, and maybe even get other stakeholders involved that are not necessarily deed, because they only have so much capacity. So I have Member Hemshute wanting to speak.
Thanks, Rebecca Hemshute. I just wanted to bring to your attention, I think this is accurate, but I need to go back to my notes. This is a nationwide problem. There's been a 35% drop in teacher training program or teacher preparation program enrollment in, I think, the last decade. And we also have a critical issue with teacher greening. We're losing veteran teachers faster than we can replace them. So the mentor teachers who would help younger teachers become excellent at their craft are also leaving the profession faster than we can replace them. And then I wanted to add your question about alternate pathways to certification. I'm going to speak as Rebecca Hemshute, not as a board member. Mm-hmm. But I would like to see a conversation about alternate pathways that is comprehensive in this state, so that we can look at that situation. And I think that needs to be a conversation involving all the stakeholders and all the partners in education. As a teacher, I don't want to see anything that, and again, I'm speaking just as myself right now, I would be very concerned with anything that cheapens or lessens the rigors of the certificate. At the same time, there are needs that are unfilled. And I would defer to the greater knowledge of our combined wisdom and a more comprehensive conversation before I took a position on anything in particular. But I think it's something we need to be looking at. Thanks.
Could that be part of the five priorities, ensuring excellent educators? That could absolutely be a track in there.
Yeah.
Okay. I think there's a follow-up on teacher retention, Representative Parrish, and then I'll get to Representative Fansler and Johnston and Sponholz. Who's got a hand up? Johnston. Go ahead, Representative Fansler. I mean, Parrish, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I went to a hearing on a proposed defined benefits bill very recently, and one of the people there was a teacher who I've known for a while. He's one of our high school English teachers, and he said something which really, really made me worry. He said that he'd already told his principal that this was his last year teaching in Alaska, because in New York State, they'll pay him more, and they'll give him a defined benefits retirement program, which gives him the confidence and security of knowing that it's not all on him, so that if there's another crash like in 08, his pension isn't wiped out. The very next day, I had a police officer start to talk to me and said without a defined benefits program, he would not be retiring from the state of Alaska. Right now, if you're Tier 4 like I am, after you're vested 5 years in, you're essentially incentivized to take your money and go. So you can tell where I stand on that, but that's not why we're all here today. I'd like to know if you believe that having a defined benefits option for new teachers would help us retain the teachers whom presently we're losing to other parts of the nation or other professions.
Member Hamilton.
Dr. Hamilton, for the record. Absolutely, who wouldn't want it? You know, that's one of those pieces that every employee looks at when they make their final decision. But I want to add to that, homegrown educators, this is no secret, are retained in Alaska. And the investment of our time, effort, money, resources into our own state's students who are looking at teaching mm-hmm. careers here in our state, they're the ones that are going to be better equipped, they're the ones who are going to stay longer, and they're the ones that are going to not jump out of the state because they love Alaska like we do. So I think that the better answer of all the things we can hand them is to make sure we give them all we can if they're homegrown so that they'll stay.
But I heard that we're not producing enough teachers to even replace the ones that we're losing. And I'd like to go back to Mr. Field's comment about one district needing 60 teachers. The Anchorage School District is going to be laying off 99 positions, I believe, in the teaching cadre, no matter what happens to the budget here. That's before the final budget from the state. I think we need to connect some folks there. All right, let's move on to Representative Fansler and then Representative Johnston.
I actually have two questions. The first one being, I know that we, especially when we've been in joint session, have focused a lot about the opportunities that there are through cooperation between our different districts and the opportunities that might be available between distance education and things like that. But also at the same time, we've recognized that there is a very large broadband disparity that occurs throughout our states. And I was wondering if anyone could speak to kind of those two issues, really, when it gets down to it, what those options are to bridge that gap, and what maybe can be done for the broadband disparity, but also at the same point talk more about our opportunities with distance education and putting that into our curriculums throughout our districts. So, thank you.
Thank you, Member Hill.
Thanks for that question. I think a lot of the positive potential will come through digital learning. And the broadband issues are significant, but, I mean, it's a $2 billion problem that we're not going to be able to solve, and I suspect you're not going to be able to solve unless your budget changes significantly. So I think the key is finding how it's enabling districts to use what bandwidth they have, and there are things that can be done without any. You know, there are ways to cache on servers and then on devices, et cetera. So, you know, we all should be looking for opportunities to expand access to broadband and increased bandwidth and speed and et cetera. But I think the greater issue for us that I hope we'll be able to focus on is helping districts know how to use what they currently have to enable, because one of the issues that relates to teachers is equity in access to quality. You know, being able to ensure that no matter where a kid lives, that they have access to excellent education. And that's challenging, but the technology is enabling us to do more of that than we've been able to in the past. It's not a silver bullet, but there, you know, there is the opportunity to do more with that. What was the second part of your question?
They were just kind of intertwined. Okay. Second question.
Okay. And I just like to make a comment about collaboration, not only within districts, but on Copper Valley Telephone, which is Valdez and the area I'm in. That CEO has done an amazing. We have fiber all over Glen Allen. We've got they're running fiber to Delta this year. The amount of grant money that they've received from the federal government, the guy's done a masterful job, and he now is going to other small co-ops to try to educate them on how to do it too. So I think there's collaboration going on that's hugely positive that could cut that $2 billion problem down, because you start getting collaboration between businesses that are doing good things in some areas, and they start reaching out to others. That's huge for the load isn't on the district, and that's part of the Inspire tribal and community ownership. I mean, getting those partnerships together so they're figuring out the solutions, and the district doesn't have to. They're just a partner in figuring that solution out. So that's hugely positive. Member Hemshoot?
Thanks, Rebecca Hemshoot. I just wanted to very briefly add, when we look at digital learning as a solution, it is absolutely very likely to be an important part of some of how we solve having an excellent educator in every classroom. But at the end of the day, the relationship with the teacher is the number one factor in quality learning. And I'd like to add, in Alaska, we have a high rate of ACEs, if you're familiar with that, adverse childhood experiences. Teachers often provide some stability that students may not be able to find at home. So when we look to digital learning, let's use it to enhance student learning, but let's not ever consider replacing that relationship with a teacher. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you for reminding us about ACEs. That is critical. Let's see. Representative Fansler, did you have a second question?
I did, if that's
okay.
And my second question, I think, also kind of goes back to the Inspire Tribal and Community Ownership. One of the things that I know is important and somewhat imperative in my region, at least, is having integration, cultural integration into curriculum. And that doesn't mean just necessarily, say, teaching, you know, in UBIC or having UBIC speaking days, but perhaps where we're actually taking traditional teaching methods and putting those in some ways back into the curriculum. Has your committee looked into those kinds of things, looked into flexibility for those kinds of things? And if so, you know, what recommendations are you coming forward with, or do you expect to come forward with for that?
We'll go with Member Hemshoot.
It's good. I'm getting some exercise. So, Rebecca Hemshoot, and regarding culturally responsive curriculum, super important, super valuable. I know the Southeast Regional Resource Center here in Juneau is doing outreach throughout the state to try to really support cultural competencies, and we need to be careful which culture, and we need to not define a particular culture, rather embrace culturally responsive teaching for all cultures. We're an incredibly diverse state. You'll never find even one classroom that has just one monoculture. It doesn't exist. So your point is super important, and I think the Educator Excellence Committee will definitely be looking at that and looking to organizations like CERC for support.
Member Isabel, for the record, I would just like to wholeheartedly agree that we do need to integrate culture into education. And one thing that's being done in my district that ties back into teacher retention is I believe they call it culture camp, but it's all incoming teachers are they spend about a week, maybe a weekend at a fish camp with elders from the region, and it's a way to integrate culture into all curriculum in a way, providing that background. Though it's no replacement for homegrown teachers, and it's no replacement for coming up in the region and in the culture, projects like that certainly provide a way to be culturally sensitive to cultures that are absolutely distinct from the ones from which most of our teachers come. Thank you.
Barbara Thompson. Curriculum development and execution are at the local level. And there is flexibility at the local level for districts to develop exactly what you're talking about. And I know in rural school, they do it. And if they're unaware that they have that flexibility now, they do. And that would be encouraged, and we expect to be hearing that through the Education Challenge, that this is an important way to get students to learn and have it be relevant and increase education achievement. So we're really expecting to hear that, but there is that flexibility now at the local level to develop those systems right now.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Representative Johnston.
Actually, Representative Panzer almost asked my question, but I'll see if I can take it one step further. In both the House and the Senate, we've heard from a number of districts and have seen a lot of highlight of great innovation and entrepreneurial work. And we've also seen that they're starting on their own to do some cross-fertilization. How do you as a commission plan to amplify this and not, worst fear would be that we would be in the way, but how do you plan to amplify it?
Member Hull.
Sue Hull, for the record, I always like an innovation question, James knows. I think we, two things. One is we have to, in order to provide the accountability that we talked about earlier, to ensure that when a kid is getting, taking Algebra 1, they're getting Algebra 1, we have to be able to have more accountability within our system. And that's kind of, I think, what your question relates to, is how do we spread those pockets of innovation and ensure that kids are achieving across the system. I certainly think it will be one of the recommendations that we give more help to that collaboration, that deed facilitate that kind of collaboration. For example, to have expectations, and of course expectations could be one of the ways, so that we're sure that across the system there's a way of assessing, being accountable for the content in those classes. Related to that, I'll just give you an example. Some superintendents at a conference last November, we were sitting there and looking at all the possibilities, digital possibilities for, instruction that could give kids access to excellence. And four different superintendents were sitting around me, and they just leaned up and said, why can't D do this? We don't have the personnel, the expertise to vet all this sort of stuff. So one of the other things that I'm hopeful will be considered in the committees is how do we vet content and make people aware of what's available so that small districts don't have to do that all themselves. There are ways that DEED can facilitate the kind of collaboration, the kind of support necessary to spread the innovations that you folks have heard about in all of these different hearings. I think that people are hungry for a unified system of support that doesn't take away their ability to do as Representative Fansler said, you know, to incorporate local curricula, et cetera, but that would give them models for assuring that across the system we've got excellence of instruction so that we can reach that mission that we've talked about, excellent education for every student every day, no matter where you live. So there has to be some ability to support, to have a greater system of support and unity in moving forward, as well as preserving local ownership and the ability to adapt it. Does that answer?
Just a brief follow-up.
Go ahead, Representative Johnson.
Yes and no. One is that I see innovation and cross-fertilization happening already around districts, and that cross-fertilization is another aspect of, you know, how are you looking at amplifying that without getting in the way? I understand where the commission indeed be sort of a clearinghouse, but then you also want to allow for the growth and the development and the innovation to continue beyond.
That's right.
Beyond that.
That's right. And I really think there are ways to do that. Let me give you an example. When we upgraded our teacher evaluation systems, the state identified two models, Marzano and Danielson. And districts chose which of those models, but there was the ability to do, you know, consistent professional development around how they might implement those systems no matter which one they chose. It's just an example of how I think we could move in the area of reforms that districts could still have local decision-making and local choice, but that they don't have to do all of the vetting that's necessary to ensure that whatever program they undertake will provide the accountability that I think as a system we owe kids and the university and everybody else. I mean, we have to do both of those things, ensure quality, while at the same time ensuring local control. And I really believe there are models for how we can do it.
I'll just respond as well, because it's a tall order. I mean, and you have pockets. But the goal is to have that spread throughout the state and have those districts and communities choose to do that. It's a tall order. I think we have the right commissioner in place. I mean, leadership matters. So I think that's critical. I coach basketball at Glen Allen High School, the boys basketball team, and I can coach two different ways. I mean, I can coach, say, hey, we're just going to go out and do a drill and, you know, what. Or you can learn, figure out how to inspire those kids to expect more out of themselves, expect more in the classroom, whatever they do in life. So I think it's a tall order. I think we're aligned. Whether it's the legislature, whether it's the governor, we have the right commissioner in place, we have the right board. It's not going to happen overnight, but what Member Hull said and what I think we can go, I mean, I think the safety and well-being, number five, that's a critical one. You've got to try to create environments that the kids, one, have ownership in their school, two, feel safe, feel like they can learn. These are all tall orders if you try to do this throughout the state. There's pockets. But I think everyone's hopeful, and I think everyone's inspired. But let's go ahead and try to get this thing done.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can't miss an opportunity to bring up the issue of civics education. And you know, the foundational reason for public education, the very reason we started it, was to create a citizenry of folks who were involved and educated and served and voted, but we've made a hash out of it. We really have, and it's not just us in Alaska. The entire country has. So my question to you is, what can you do to make sure that we create students who become citizens, who become involved, and who care about not only the facts, the dates and the wars and the battles and all that, but more than that, the very reason to be an American citizen?
Thanks. We'll go with Member Michael first and go from there.
like I said earlier, member Mike for the record, like I said earlier, I'm on the curriculum council for my school district, and we have been really working to, us on social studies this year, to make citizens out of our students. A big thing that is being done is starting with civics and ending with U.S. government, so that right when you get into high school, you have that baseline of why is it important for me to be engaged? And then when you're leaving, you're reminded this is why it is important for you to be engaged. And so I think that it's not the place of the state, this is me speaking personally, not on behalf of the board, to tell school districts how to engage with students and make it so that they feel like they're, like, make them feel as like citizens, because Norvik, Alaska, and Anchorage are not the same place. Their students there won't feel as, won't become citizens in the same way. So I think if we focus on local control, then that's how we build citizens out of students. Thank you.
Yeah, for the record, John Harmon, second vice chair of the deed board. And through the chair, Senator Stevens, you know, I jotted down some notes before I came here. I'm so glad you asked this question, because it goes back to, as a board, we were looking at, we looked at our mission, we came up with a new mission. We also looked at vision, and we actually adopted a new vision as it relates to something that came from the legislative language, from the legislature, the statutory language. But it's that all students can succeed in their education and work, shape worthwhile and satisfying lives for themselves, exemplify the best values of society, and be effective in improving the character and quality of the world around them. And again, that's currently our vision here at the Department of Education and Early Development. And I just think whenever you have a mission and a vision, you need to focus on those. So I know it is something that we will continue to focus on, but it is a priority for us as it relates to those civics in society. Thank you.
Okay.
And if I could follow up just one
Go
comment.
Ahead, Senator Stevens.
It's not enough to say, let the local community do it. It's not enough to say, it'll take care of itself. It's not taking care of itself. We have made a mess of things. And I can say when I was a student, I mean, not, everyone says when I was a kid, but we studied current events, we studied history, we wanted to vote, we could hardly wait to vote. We just can't let it slide and hope for the best. I think that it's your responsibility. You've got to make sure you have a plan. How are you going to make sure that every child in Alaska has an understanding of his responsibility, her responsibility as a citizen? I appreciate any comments you make, Sue.
Yeah, Vice Chair Hall, for the record, thank you, Senator Stevens, and thank you for your work on this issue, because I don't think any of us disagree with you, and we'd all like to improve it. I think one of the practical tools is looking at what we expect of graduates. Member Thompson and I will be chairing the Student Achievement Committee, and one of the things I'm going to propose to that committee, I don't know whether it will come out of the recommendations, but I certainly hope it will, it's being done in other states, and I think it will be helpful in this regard, is to define what we expect of our graduates a little differently than we have in the past. Developing a graduate profile that includes not only content knowledge, okay, because we've always talked about that. That's how we've graded our systems in the past, was how we did on standardized tests. But content knowledge is important, but there are other things. There's also communication, collaboration, and civics, the ability to be successful as a productive citizen within our communities. And I'm hopeful that in collaboration with the business community, with educators, with citizens at large, to look at what is it we really want our schools to produce. You know, as John read, we've had this statute for a long time that makes clear what the purpose of education is, and yet we're really not aligning. James referred to our discussions yesterday with the National Association of State Boards of Education, and what they talked about is you've got to say, here's what we expect of kids, and then, you know, make sure that all of your systems are aligned. Well, I think our expectations right now are content standards, which is good. That's great.
But that's not all. And you've pointed out that's not all. There are also skills that we want them to have in addition to content knowledge. So I'm hopeful that that conversation will lead us to look at the work that your commission did, et cetera, so that we can move forward in ensuring things, not just content knowledge, but also those skills.
Okay. Senator Begich. And at this point, I'd just like to remind the body that we're ending this at 9:30 today, and that at some point I'm going to ask the students directly for questions.
Well, so I actually, you anticipate one of my questions. I have two questions that I'm going to ask, and this is an opportunity for us to talk to all the members of the board, which is pretty rare, so I'm going to take advantage of that as well. But I want Charles to know that I'm going to be asking him a question about his intent and what he hopes to accomplish on the board in the coming years. So that's coming. And I'm going to ask, as part of that question, I'll be asking you as well, Fred, what you have accomplished, what you feel you've accomplished. So prep for that while I go through this process. I want to echo something that Senator Stevens said, and it's also, I'm going to echo some things that Representatives Fansler and Johnston have said, but in particular with Senator Stevens, you know, democracy fails if we don't educate people. And I think, Member Hall, you underscored that the reason, one of the primary reasons we don't look at civics education, which was required when I went through Anchorage schools, we were required to do U.S. history, U.S. I mean, we had a pretty rigorous schedule, but part of it's because we measure our school's success with stars and little numbers that are all measured by reading, writing, arithmetic, because somehow that was going to make us a better country. And it is a failed approach to education. We don't teach critical thinking. In fact, in the state of Texas, there was one political party that actually had a platform in 2012. One of its platform points was to remove critical thinking from the curricula. They actually said those words. I think we've really gone the wrong direction, and so I'm encouraged by what I'm hearing here. Representative Fansler and Representative Johnston spoke about digital learning, and I know that Senator Hughes has recognized what you said, Member Henshute, which is that you need a quality teacher in the classroom if you're going to do, because there are limitations to what we can do with tech teaching and what we can do with our digital learning. And she learned that by the process of encountering information in these joint hearings and these processes, and so she incorporated that in her bill. And we talk about retaining teachers, and we go through this motion every single year about retaining teachers. The bottom line there is nobody wants to teach because we batter teachers time and time again. We tell everyone in this process, you know, teaching's great, oh, but by the way, you're not going to have enough of a salary to raise a family on a teaching salary. And while it's great that Alaska-born teachers stay here, Alaska-raised teachers stay here, in the end they don't. They leave. They go find other work that pays them better. So until we start addressing the issue of teacher pay and teacher retirement and whether or not that retirement is meaningful or not meaningful, we won't get there. We will always devolve to these diatribes about, you know, how much we pay and how active our teachers are and whether they should or shouldn't be. And I think that's part of what's damaged our system. So I hope during the challenge process you look into that. But this is my question, because I was getting to one. And my question is, in the process of this session and next session, we're going to be working on a number of different policies. I've mentioned pre-K for me. I know Senator Hughes has a pretty comprehensive bill that addresses a number of different areas, including the collaboration you folks talked about, which I think is also critical. But these issues are going to come and perhaps even pass this session before the education challenge has actually fully met and fully vetted their ideas. So what would be your request of us when it comes to policy education? Now, I guess I'll direct that to you, James, but what would be your request of us on these policy bills we're working on before you finish the education challenge? And then my second question will come back to these two guys. So,
You want me to answer that?
I do.
You do? Well, I've looked at SB 96, and there's a lot of great stuff in there that I think would be touched on in the Alaska Challenge, there's no doubt. Obviously, it's still going through the getting worked on and getting, you know, yeah.
I'm not asking, Madam Chair.
Specifically.
Yes.
Specifically not about SB 96, but just any education policy bill that's coming forward. Right. What would be the hope of the board in terms of those issues and how you would want to see us address issues of policy before you've completed the education challenge?
Well, in a perfect world, give us time to get through this process. And I know I've talked to legislators that say, well, we've been waiting for years. We're tired of waiting. And I totally get that. But I think leadership matters and timing matters. And I think we've got the right timing and we have the right alignment. So supporting the Alaska Challenge would be my answer. Support that initiative and give us time. And you all are going to be part of that initiative on those committees. So you're going to have a say. And then I think December of 2017, we should have some information to move forward, some action steps, legislative action steps. So I would ask that you just give us time and trust us. And I know you've probably heard that before. But again, I think we have the right leadership in place and the right alignment to move something forward. Member Harmon?
Yeah, for the record, John Harmon, second vice chair, and through the chair, and I think it's an excellent question. I think what my recommendation would be to the legislature, if I had one, and to you folks in particular, would be, you know, whenever we have issues come up, we try to address issues through the various lenses we know. You know, constituents give us input. We may look at finances. We may look at culture. We may look at a lot of different things. But I would encourage you, as you come up with all of these ideas and you're making decisions, to go back to what I know we've recently developed as a mission, and that's, you know, an excellent education for every student every day. So if you could, I guess speaking as an individual here and not as a board, but if you could, when you're making your decisions, use that as your primary lens, I think that's the best way to be in alignment to move forward with Education Alaska. Thank you.
This tells me we should have had this meeting in January, not almost April.
Can I have Member Gallagher?
Thank you, Member Gallagher, for the record. And comments more to your comments, not your question. Thank you. Thank you very much, teachers. We as a state do not respect teachers. And I mean that in terms of money, in terms of what we give them, how hard their job is, how hard we make it for them, honestly. And it never seems to be a topic of discussion. And I was so glad. I was smiling, shaking, nodding my head. Those are the types of questions we have to talk about. We have to discuss that. Without teachers, good teachers, we're not going to succeed. We can make all the plans in the world. Without them, we're not going to make it. You talked about money. First-year teacher flies to Kotzebue, Alaska, single woman or man, they can't afford to live there. They have to find a roommate. There's not much of an incentive for them to stay there. But we have to fix things like that. And when I say that, I'm not talking about raising the budget. Let's take part of that budget and give it to those first-year teachers. However we do that. There's so many things we can do to make the teachers' life easier. They should be there to teach. We make so many rules and regulations We're kicking them out the door. And I thank you for that comment. I was so happy. Thank you.
Excellent. I have a question for the students, and I'd like to sort of combine it with Senator Begich's question and let the student members advise us. Wilfried, you've been a member for some time now, and you're on your way out. And Charles, you're coming in. So there's only actually one student member at a time. Okay, sorry, I misunderstood. I'd like to know what your experience has been like on the board, no matter, you know, what your length of time, and how has it changed how you view your schools?
Members of Bell, for the record, my experience on the board has been one of, it's been an experience, it's almost hard to put into words as a 17-year-old, the opportunities I've had because of this board. I've had the opportunity to answer your question, Senator, to shape education policy, to provide input, and in a very real way to help direct the board's strategic plan and through that the Alaska's Education Challenge, and through that the future of education in Alaska in a very real way. And I think that it's been an experience, it's been a validating experience as a student in Alaska to show that we as students are, our input is valued, our voices are listened to, that we are not tokenized, we are not taken for granted, but we are seen as the first and foremost stakeholders in education. And I think that it's been, it's renewed my faith in the education system in Alaska in a very real way. And I believe that though we're sort of between a rock and a hard place right now as a state and with education specifically, I think that there is an ingenuity inherent in Alaskans that will drive us out of this. And this board and my experience on this board has redoubled that faith. So thank you.
Member Michael, for the record. Well, in my vast amount of experience, having started my first in-person meeting on Monday, it's been nice to see people working really hard to make Alaskan education the best it possibly can be, which is phenomenal. I've seen people who have like other jobs taking time off of that to come down here and voice their opinions and seeing and build something great that they can look back on with pride. To answer you, Senator Begich, I will put on the Modernization and Finance Committee for the Alaska Education Challenge, and that's awesome because I talked about that committee in my interview, so that was cool. And I know I've been talking about personal experience a lot, but it's the only experience I have. My school recently dumped its world history, or its AP world class, because there weren't enough teachers to justify it. But there are free AP World History curriculums available online that have been approved by the College Board. So looking at that and trying to show school districts that that is something that can be done is what I hope to provide to the state and to my school district and other school districts and make education the best for students in Alaska.
Thank you. Thank you, students. I apologize. I think I may have, there may have been some other answers to Senator Begich's questions. Member Thompson?
I'll make it quick.
Thank you.
Barbara Thompson. Yeah. You asked about what you want from us or what can we do. I would go back to what James has said all throughout this is, a sustainable fiscal plan. Whether the Alaska Challenge comes after this session or before or during, or whether we have met in January or not, what comes out of the Alaska Challenge will fit into whatever we're doing in Alaska, but we have to have a fiscal plan in order to move forward. So that's where I would go with that. And you mentioned the civics education at the beginning, and I wanted to take the opportunity to refer back to Senator Stevens and the Civic Education Task Force. They have done an amazing amount of work, and the recommendations from that committee, many of them are directly applicable to the State Board and to the Department of Education and can be achieved. And whether they're through clearinghouses, whether they're through the review of the standards and updating of the standards, which will be occurring, all standards, including those related to the Civics Education Task Force, I am promising that those will not get lost. Those are what make you a human being and a good citizen. And so I just wanted to say those things in closing. Thank you very much.
Excellent. I think we're at a point where we must wrap up. I know senators have to go. House members are welcome to stay if you want to continue a conversation. Senator Geisel has an announcement from the Senate side.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just announcing the next Senate education meeting will be tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. We have two items on the agenda, Senate Bill 78, PFD Contributions and Lottery, and Senate Bill 96, the Alaska Education Transformation Act. We have invited testimony from the NEA, the School Board Association, the Council of School Administrators, and the Teamsters Union. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Geisel. As far as the House Education Committee, we'll be meeting at 8 a.m. on Friday, where we will be discussing early education in more depth. I hate to adjourn this meeting because it's been fascinating. If our House members willing to stay and continue a conversation?
I have to go, Madam Chair.
Okay. House members, all right. Okay, let's let the senators go, and then we'll adjourn when we've exhausted our questions. Thank you. Okay.
Yes.
In person. Thank you for all the work you've done. We're not going to let it fall off the table. We're not.
Thank you. Right.
Sure. Thank you very much. I really appreciate you guys doing this.
Move over to the
bill. Figure out what's going on.
Oh, all right. Well, okay.
At least maybe somewhere where there's a paper.
Folks, I've been advised that we have to adjourn as the senators have left, so I'm going to do that, and then we should just stay in the room and continue to have conversations. So I'm adjourning this joint meeting at 9:30 a.m.